Today's episode of The Oil Can is brought to you by Remarkably Remote, a new daily microcast from the experts at GoToMeeting, all about making work from home for you. With indispensable intel on how to stay sane, motivated, and productive at home, we're here to help you in this brave new remote working world. Find us on smart speakers or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. You can also listen at gotomeeting.com/tips. That's gotomeeting.com/tips. Hi, and welcome to the Oil Can Podcast. I'm Jonathan Willis, and joining me today is Daniel Nugent Bowman. How are you, Daniel?
I'm well, John. How are you?
Oh, you know, hanging in there. It's getting a little old being stuck at home and not being able to watch any live hockey, but everybody's in the same boat, and what else do you do, right?
Yeah, I shouldn't. My wife and I, we actually did watch the movie Groundhog Day the other night, and I think that was a mistake because it really is starting to feel that way, you know, going for the same walk every night and kind of doing the same thing. Don't know what day of the week it is or what should be going on in the world, but it's certainly weird and interesting times, I'll say.
Yeah, I can see how that would be an error. But, you know, one thing that you and I have that's in our favor is that we don't have to do a live radio show every day. We have these weekly podcasts, and then we have a bit of time to put articles on whatever subject we want together. Our guest on the podcast today has a much more challenging job as the host of Oilers Now. Joining us is Bob Stauffer. How are you, Bob?
Good, Jonathan. Good, Daniel. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, doing well. What are you up to right now? You're doing the show every day. How much has your routine changed?
It's completely different. As you guys have mentioned in the past on your podcasts and over the last couple of weeks and in the writing that you guys have done, I mean, we're sort of we're getting a bit of a not a reevaluation in life, but we're recognizing what's truly important here, and we're in a battle, and it's something that's completely unforeseen, and it has affected everybody. So we get to work in the toy department of life on a daily basis, and if you'd asked me when I was 6 years of age, you know, what do you want to do? It was either to be a player or a play-by-play guy or a color guy, right? Or talk about sports for a living. And so I get to do that. And we're in a bit of a pause, and it's a tough time. And we got to get everybody, you know, staying safe and staying at home. So in terms of how dramatic the change has been, instead of doing the show in studio or at Rogers Place on a game day or in my hotel room, you know, we're doing it from the house. There's some technical challenges that come with that. And then the other part of it is that the Oilers Edmonton rights holder is on 630 CHED, and 630 CHED is also it's a news and sports and conversation station. So a lot of the focus right now is on COVID-19 and the pandemic, and as a result I have links now built up to six different sites that I check literally during the two-hour show, probably six times during the show, just to check in to see, you know, one of the sites is Worldometer's, info, the Alberta Health site, because of when the numbers come out for Quebec and Ontario, I end up on the Quebec Health and the Ontario Health sites as well. And then we have to reference the fact that we've got ongoing COVID coverage during the course of the show. So the show has obviously a little bit different feel. And then we don't have anything current to talk about in terms of, you know, the play of the night before. So it's forced us to be a little bit of, a little bit more creative. The one thing I would say is it's a completely different situation. But, you know, I lived through the 04-05 lockout when I was on the, on 1260 at that time. And then the first half of the season shut down in 12-13 for the lockout. So I have a little bit of experience in terms of how to, you know, deal with maybe not having the same regular consistent content to go to, but in terms of what we're dealing with the pandemic, it's completely on a different scale. And it's, I think we're going to see a different NHL, moving forward long-term as a result of this. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You're being focused, differently as well. And maybe, I know my case, I have even a greater appreciation for what I do as a result of this. But make no mistake, guys, it has dramatically changed what we do on a day-by-day basis.
Well, Bob, I guess the one thing that's different, you mentioned, how bad or how tough of a, a health thing this is for the entire world. And that's, I guess that's different from the lockouts, because this is affecting people on a day-to-day level or whatnot. Now, I just wanted to segue to something in terms of health. Terrible segue, but it obviously is affecting somebody's life, and that's Colby Cave. And I don't really have a specific question for you, but I just kind of wanted to open the floor for you. Colby is a guy that we all know, and I had a chance to cover him a little bit in junior hockey. All his teammates adore this guy. Sickening, heart-wrenching news yesterday, and I just wanted to get your thoughts about that.
Well, I think you guys had just finished up the Ken Holland availability when the release went out from, or not the release, but I guess the that WhatsApp, the notice went out. That was 14 minutes before we went on air. And I'll be honest with you, I was just in shock. And, I lost somebody in my life that had, a stroke, which came from a scan that was not done far enough down in the brainstem. This is, I know lots of other people that have had, sort of similar stories, but we don't expect to see it with somebody that's 25 and as healthy as Colby. All I can say is, thoughts and prayers, and he's in the situation that he's in, and they've got him with, excellent people at Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto. But it is it's a scary dose of reality, and it again reinforces how fortunate we are to work in the hockey side of things. And I'm like you, Daniel. I mean, he's a, I watched him play with Jake DeBrusk a little in Swift Current when I had occasionally watched Western League games, and it's just a sad story, and I we're all hoping for him and praying for him.
Obviously, a much more difficult situation, but this isn't the first time either. The Oilers have had a young guy with health challenges the last few years. We're certainly hoping for the best for Colby Cave, but my mind, at least, what I flash back to was Ryan Mantha, who, Mantha, fortunately, his life wasn't in danger, but suddenly losing his sight in the middle of a very promising rookie season at Bakersfield. It's just, we're seeing it every day with coronavirus, but when these guys lose their careers, it's just a reminder of how much less important hockey is. We all love the game, obviously, we all love what we do, but your heart just goes out to these guys.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in Ryan Mantha's case, I mean, I think there was some hope there that the Oilers could take a player that, the Rangers ultimately didn't sign, and they thought they could grow him out. He was just starting to hit his stride, and it was just a tough one. And it's funny, I've had conversations with certain executives around the league about the fact that because of the severity of injuries today, specifically concussions, that they should increase the size of the reserve list to a 55-man list, because we take injuries completely seriously. But that was a sad situation for Ryan Mantha. Absolutely, Jonathan. He had a chance to grow and develop as a player.
So speaking of reserve lists, there's one guy on the Oilers, and that's Anton Slepyshev, and something that came out of Ken Holland's availability was the fact that he's very interested in signing this player and having him come back to the Oilers, and has actually offered him a contract. And I'm curious where you would think, if the Oilers could get Slepyshev, where he would kind of slot in and what kind of player he could be for this hockey club.
Well, you saw him play a bit, Daniel. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, put it this way, I certainly think there was more there than maybe what he showed in the two seasons that he spent time with Edmonton in 16-17 and 17-18. I do think look at Mark Giordano. There's a primary example of a guy that went back to the KHL and became a better player. And it's evident by, I think Slepyshev was the KHL player of the month in the month of February, went on that extended scoring streak. you know, he's big, he can protect the puck, he can skate. Part of it for me would be his ability to read and react off whoever he plays with. I certainly think he can play, frankly, as a top nine forward in the NHL. So I guess I'd sort of slot him in third line left wing. The team's got a lot of right wings moving forward. Cassian, I think it's safe to say at this stage of the game that Yamamoto is a legitimate top six forward. He certainly played like it over the 26 or 27 games that he was here after December 31st. So you have, you know, Yamamoto, Cassian, Archibald, who they've signed, and kills penalties, effective guy, you know, and then you got Chase on. So they got four. Those are legitimate right wings for me at the NHL level. So I see Slepyshev playing over on the left side on either the third or fourth line. And there's obviously Nugent Hopkins is there. Then you got to factor in James Neal, Athanasiou, and Nygaard. So, you know, and that doesn't include Kara. Maybe Kara ultimately ends up at center. So bottom line here is, you know, I don't know about you guys, but to me, I'd be intrigued to see if maybe he could play second unit power play, because I think he can shoot the puck a little bit. He's not a penalty killer. And I don't think you can, if you know, I don't think you can pay him more than you're paying Archibald just because of what Archibald did to your PK. So I think you've got a range of the price point, which would be somewhere between, you know, 1.2 to 1.4 million. I don't know if you could get above that. I haven't talked to Ken Holland about the specific numbers, but you know, Archibald was a pretty important player for this team as a third line right wing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I personally looked at Archibald too when I wrote about Slepyshev earlier this year. You know, he went on that tear. You mentioned KHL Player of the Month, and that I think probably makes him a little pricier to sign than he might have been otherwise. But yeah, like he's obviously not going to have the PK role of Archibald, and you know, the second unit power play doesn't get a lot of time. Just listening to you describe who you see on the wings, the question that popped into my head is, would you pretty much stick, like if it were up to you, if the Bob Stauffer is as armchair GM question here, would you stick mostly with the status quo, or are there free agents out there that you would look at that you think would be a good fit for Edmonton?
Well, Jonathan, a couple things. Number one, what's the cap situation going to be? That to me is the $81 million question, right? Like, I mean, let's do the math here. And I know we're going to get into this, but, you know, hopefully we find a way to have regular season. Maybe we don't get to 82 games. Maybe we get to 78. So maybe the Oilers play seven more and some other teams play 10. And maybe that's a completely unrealistic objective to create here. I mean, we don't know at this stage. And things look, you know, we're doing okay here in Alberta. The province has tested a ton. I think they're up around 67,000 tests. They're testing at roughly 2% of the tests are coming back positive. You know, 1,350 or so positive tests out there. Alberta has a relatively low ICU rate compared to other provinces. So Edmonton's in a pretty good position. You know, BC, he's done a good job in sort of, you know, settling things down here. I think they've had left fewer than, you know, 30 to 35 new cases per day for the last 3 or 4 days. But there are some other jurisdictions in the National Hockey League that are just, they're reeling right now. So maybe it's not even the least bit pragmatic that we play again. But the issue right now is, I don't know how you can project what the cap's going to be. Is it going to be a $75 million cap? Is it going to be an $81 million cap? Is there going to be a amnesty buyout put in place? So I'd say this. If I were the armchair GM, the position that I might be inclined to spend on probably would be a third line center. If there's extra, because to me, it looks like they've got some wingers. You know, obviously you got McDavid and Draisaitl. You probably have an option of a Sheehan or a Kara, and Sheehan's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season here, but as an option as a fourth line center moving forward. You've got some left wingers, you've got, you know, a full stable of right wings. So I might be disinclined to step up and sign another left wing. And then the wild card in this for me, guys, is what happens. You know, where's the cap going to be at? And is there an opportunity to do a buyout that doesn't count against the cap? And then how creative do you trade that to teams that, want to get to the cap theoretically? I don't know. So that's, to me, that's all got to be, it's an open-ended question at this stage, but I might prioritize third line center if it were me.
Another kind of wild card to me, and it is very interesting how Ken Holland really shored up a lot of pending unrestricted free agents and got them signed, whether it's Cassian, Archibald, even Nygaard, who has obviously been hurt for the last while here. But the one kind of outstanding contract that needs to be addressed, and this is an RFA, but is Ethan Bear. There's a lot of different ways you can go, and Bobby, you've already referenced the cap and the fluidity or the uncertainty there, but in your mind, do you think there's a chance for or a better chance for a short term or a long term, or how would maybe you trying to go about addressing that situation and getting Ethan Bear signed back up to the team?
You know, Daniel, I can't speak for Ken, but the system is what the system is, which means you kind of have to prioritize the UFAs because you might lose them or you have to trade them going into a deadline. And I look at Ethan Bear and I look at maybe a guy like Anthony DeAngelo, the situation that happened there. And, maybe logic dictates that we might be looking at just, I know there's a lot, like, I'm not going to, Ethan Bear has been a huge, you guys watch the team and follow the team as Glenn, have as good a feel for the team as anybody out there. He's made a massive impact on the Oilers, especially 5-on-5, because he hasn't gotten a lot of power play time. So he's really, let's face it, the combination of Ethan Bear in the first half of the year and then what Yamamoto and Jones gave them coming up in the new year transformed and accelerated the process for the Oilers, along with, the special teams and the great job the coaches did handling things and the goaltenders, being competitive with one another. But I just look at how the cap system works, especially now. I think we're looking at a short-term deal, and it might just be a one-year deal. Because you've got two guys, and Chris Russell and Adam Larson, who next year will be in the last year of their deal. And then there might be a little bit more money opening up at that point. And then you can look at maybe doing a longer-term extension. I totally understand that, like, Ethan Bear has a huge following with our fan base in Edmonton. There's no denying that. But, and I get the fans that say, well, you got to sign him to a Klefbom type of contract. And I think that all makes sense, except not in the next year. So, and especially now, since it looks like if this thing doesn't settle down and the CDC and Canada Health are totally advising against any form of playing here, and we don't have a conclusion to the regular season or a playoffs, we're talking at least $1 billion difference in terms of the projections for HRR. So instead of $5 million, we're looking at $4 million. Well, half that $4 million goes to the players, so that's $2 billion. Divide that amongst 31 teams. How much does that knock the cap down? So, and again, I think there will be an opportunity for the NHLPA and the NHL we talk to all these guys. You might even hear some of the interviews once in a while on the show, but we talk to John Shannon, who's got his league sources, and Brian Burke, who's got his league sources, and Elliot Friedman and Brian Lawton. These guys are in contact with and it's pretty clear something's going to get a bridge moving forward here. But in terms of Ethan, I just think that logic dictates it's probably going to be a short-term bridge deal.
Should take a moment here to mention the two-man advantage. This week, Wayne Gretzky is joining Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside. So check that out, the two-man advantage at theathletic.com. Bob, you mentioned a one-year deal for Bear, which is really interesting to me because it's not something I'd thought a ton about, but it's sort of a bridge deal without being a bridge deal, right? Because you still have a lot of RFA years. You could still potentially sign him long term at a reduced rate afterward. But no matter which way they go with him, I don't think there's any question that he fits into the plans on defense. Now, going into what at the time was going to be a playoff run, I thought I had a pretty good feel for what they might do on defense. I know Evan Bouchard has been phenomenal in the American League. I thought Mike Green played well, albeit very briefly. And I thought Adam Larson might be the guy that they shopped. And then you could have something like Bear, Green, and Bouchard, or Bear, Green, and Benning on the right side next to Clefbaum, Nurse, and Caleb Jones. Now I don't know what to think. They've got a bit of a logjam on defense. How would you solve it? Would you look at bringing Mike Green back, maybe? Would you look at trading guys? Like, there's so many bodies there, it's going to be a tough decision, right?
I would think, Jonathan, if you take a look at how Ken Holland handled the situation with Yamamoto, there might be something similar that could occur theoretically with Evan Bouchard. Now, Bouchard is going to have played more than Yamamoto played last year. Bouchard's going to have something to say about that. But, you know, you got Larson and Barron, and Larson's an interesting guy. I thought he played his best over maybe the final 8 to 12 games before we got shut down or before the pause started.
I'd agree with that.
And I think there's still a lot of managers around the league that really like him. But I think two of the right shot defense to start next year will be, like, again, we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves because I think we're going to talk about potential. What would you do to start the playoffs with if there wasn't needed playoffs? But I think that, you know, Bear's an absolute given, and I think Larson will be here next year at the start of the season as well. And I might be inclined to look, you know, you got Benning and you got Green. I'd have one of those guys here. And then that way you're not forcing Bouchard into a job. And maybe if you're a little bit flat at a point during the season and he continues to improve, maybe you can have a similar impact as what we saw when Yamamoto and Jones came up halfway through the season this year.
Very interesting. And Bob, you kind of did read our minds in terms of talking a little bit about the current state of affairs in terms of heading toward the stretch run. Had there been one, or should there still be one? And one of the kind of the pressing issues around the team heading into the postponement there was Connor McDavid and his line mates, because obviously he was sick for the one game, but Dave Tippett was kind of really searching for the right combination with him, and he did end with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Cassian, which ultimately did obviously split up that really great line of Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, and Kyler Yamamoto. But I'm just curious, how do you see that top six? And if we changed your cap from the GM cap to the coach's cap, how would you handle Connor and line mates for him?
Yeah, I think it would be, Daniel, I think there would be a little bit of a state of flux. Okay. You can make an argument for Nugent-Hopkins being up there with McDavid and Cassian, but how does that change the complexion of what Nugent-Hopkins gave you with Yamamoto and Draisaitl? I think part of the thing for Nugent-Hopkins and Yamamoto is they're really both really smart players, and their read and react game is there. And so they play, like, I think they had something, and I'm going to give you a wild card in this, and not one that everyone's going to agree with. But to me, Nygaard was an important guy coming back because he can skate. He can get in on the forecheck. And you could theoretically have had, you know, maybe sometimes James Neal would have been up with McDavid and Cassian, like we saw through much of January. And I know what the plus minus is, and I know what the advanced stats were on that. But you might have seen, I think Neal would have been better come playoff time because of his experience. And then that could have kept Nugent-Hopkins with Draisaitl and Yamamoto. And then you could have had a situation where Nygaard was back. He had some success with Sheehan and Archibald because both Archibald and Nygaard got in on the forecheck. And then that put Athanasiou maybe playing with Chiasson and either Kara or Haas. So that's kind of how I would have seen them. And then you could have flipped depending upon any one of three guys to play with McDavid, in my opinion. I mean, Athanasiou, I wouldn't have force fed just because I think he's a little bit of a lone, he's a bit of a freelancer, you know? So he's going to take some time to sort of grow, and we got to give them time. Most general managers will tell you it takes 3 months for a new player coming in after a trade. So I wouldn't force feed Athanasiou into a spot there with Nugent-Hopkins, or sorry, with McDavid. But occasionally I might look at it. And then the guy that I didn't include that could also do it is Tyler Ennis. So, I mean, they basically had 14 forwards for 12 spots. But I would have put Nugent Hopkins, if it were me, I would have put Nugent Hopkins back with Draisaitl and with Yamamoto.
I really liked that. Well, I mean, everybody liked that Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Yamamoto line. It was dominant at 5-on-5 for a massive stretch there. I think it's fair to say we're not talking about Draisaitl as the prohibitive favorite for the Hart Trophy, if not for the success of that trio. And, you know, obviously the lion's share of the credit goes to Draisaitl, but you gotta give some to all of those guys and what they've done for the team. Interesting you mentioned Ennis last there, because I really liked him. I know he had some ups and downs, but I thought him, and it wasn't clear to me that Cassian was going to be a lock on that line, given the way Ennis had played. I thought he had some Yamamoto-ish elements to his game almost, but you know, as you say, it's a bit of a log jam. What about in net? To me, I think Mikko Koskinen is the number one guy going into the playoffs. I think both guys you would have used in the lead up to. Would you have started with Koskinen or the more experienced Smith, knowing how well he played for Calgary last year?
I would have started with Koskinen, knowing that Smith has the competitive juices that if Koskinen falters, you can play that card. All I can say about Koskinen is he has worked, you know, incredibly hard on his game. He didn't handle a puck very well. He spent an extra, I'd say, 18 to 22 minutes before each practice working on puck handling, really from day one last year. He needed to improve his glove hand. He put a lot of extra work on his glove this year. Of course, the Oilers did a better job penalty killing, didn't leave as many backdoor looks, that sort of thing. But to me, Koskinen, and the other thing is you've got Koskinen signed for, another couple of years, guys. It's interesting on these contracts, right? Like Draisaitl's deal, everybody criticized it initially. Now it's looking like a pretty good deal. And it's going to get to a bigger point that I want to discuss with you guys is that this team's going to continue to grow and improve because it's got, you know, the best player in the world, another guy that's a top five player in the world, and they're driving to be better. And in the process, they're going to drive others to be better. But I think that Smith and Koskinen have made each other better, but I'd start with Koskinen.
Bob, this is the last one for me, and I really appreciate your time. I know John does too. I'm just curious if you have kind of, and we don't know where things are going. Hopefully we do get back to playing hockey here. But so far, do you have a favorite moment of the year? You know, was it maybe McDavid's goal in Toronto? There's obviously McDavid had a 6-point night. Draisaitl had some tremendous games. They had a good run early. I mean, there's lots probably to choose from, but I'll give you the floor. And does anything really stick out to you about a team that has really probably exceeded expectations this season?
Yeah, by the way, guys, I had them at, I think, 93 to 94 points. So what were they on pace for? 99, maybe? 100? Favorite moments? For Connor, I was really happy. He scored that goal in Toronto. He had a big game. The Oilers hadn't won there. Of course, they hadn't won in Pittsburgh since Connor had come in the league, and Draisaitl got the overtime winner there. But the favorite game for me was the game in Calgary. Yamamoto scoring on the first, they scored in their first two shifts of the game. Yamamoto, the smallest player in the ice, going in and knocking a guy off the puck and then going back to the front of the net, scoring, and then giving Riddick a little bit of a little bit of gamesmanship going back the other way. And, McDavid, I think, scored twice in that game. You had some fun stuff, obviously, occur. I think of the one sequence in the second period where the Oilers stripped Calgary about five times, and then they slid the puck across to Nugent Hopkins into the open net. And I was just like, to me, that was the epitome of what that line was, you know, just their relentlessness and their pursuit on the puck. And then even Sam Gagner, getting an opportunity to settle an old score with Mark Giordano, and then that led to the line brawl, and then you had the goalies going at it. And, you know, we all loved Cam Talbot. Part of me was thinking, don't do this. because everybody, like Mike Smith and Robin Lehner, really are on a different level than the other goalies in the league. So I was physically just, it was, I was as jacked up as I'd been for a regular season game in a long time. And it took me back to, you know, before I was working as a broadcaster, and I was an Oilers fan throughout the 1980s. And even when I first kind of dabbled in it a little bit in the late 80s, early 90s, doing the Golden Bears, I still was a huge Oilers fan. I remember that, you know, the 88 series. I mean, I can tell you exactly where I was when Gretzky scored in game two in 88, or, you know, the Oilers that series of Calgary in 91. I mean, that was sort of the last stand for both teams, and they just absolutely, you know, crushed each other. Well, that game back in, when was it, late January, that game sort of, or maybe it was early February even, that game got, yeah, it was early February because it was the day before Super Bowl, that got everybody sort of re-engaged. There had been these little border skirmishes before, but the battle was fully back on after that night, and it was awesome. So there were some good moments on the road, more so on the road than at home. There were some real impressive victories on the road this year. But for me, the game against the Flames just, it had it all. The Oilers scored 8 goals. You had, you know, the smallest, you know what it was, guys? It was in the, in Mark Spector's book, The Battle of Alberta, he talked about, you know, Craig Muni said, you get defined by how you play against Calgary because everybody needs to be in and committed against Calgary. And at the end of the game, Gaetan Haas was going back at Matthew Tkachuk after Tkachuk cheap shotted him in the corner, you know? And I was thinking, you know, Gagne stepping up for himself, Haas, Yamamoto, we've seen him get engaged over and over again. They're all in. So for me, that was my favorite game of the year for the Oilers.
So I said that was the last question. I have just a quick follow-up because something in your answer kind of made me laugh there, and that was you thinking about Cam Talbot saying, you know, don't do that, you know? And I obviously didn't get a chance to know Cam Talbot as well as you did. He was only here for just over half of the year last year, my first year covering the team. But, you know, I could tell he's a very competitive guy, but he's, you know, the most polite guy you can want to talk to, and seems very, you know, quiet and reserved. Were you surprised that Cam Talbot was one of the goalies to get in the first goalie fight in the Battle of Alberta?
I was just surprised that we had one.
Yeah, okay.
Because it had been so, you know, and you just don't see that anymore, right? Sure. Like the game has, you know, guys, in growing up, like I played for the Southside Athletic Club in Edmonton, and we fought in midgets. Like guys knew if you went to junior hockey, if like, you know, you're playing midget double A hockey, and there were fights in those games, you know, guys would, and the guys that took off the cages and were prepared to fight, you're like, oh, that guy must be really tough. Or, you know, or a complete psycho, and it'd make you think, right? So, and in junior hockey, like, you knew if you went to a junior camp, you were going to have to fight, right? And that just, the game has, in many respects, moved to a better place. So, yeah, I'll be honest with you, like, Daniel, I was stunned that occurred. And I found it interesting even how, you know, Gagne went at Giordano, and I knew that Giordano had face washed him badly when Gagne came back from the broken jaw, when obviously Cassian got him. And I knew that had bothered Sam because he'd mentioned it to me before, and I've got a pretty good memory for those things. And I knew if there was ever one team and the other team up by 3 or 4 goals, that there, you know, there might be a come to Jesus moment out on the ice. And then I was sitting there watching where Nurse was going. And I think Nurse wanted to make sure that Gagne was going to be in an okay spot there. And then I'm watching Tkachuk. And then the next thing, you know, Ethan Bear is chucking him with, you know, Matthew Tkachuk. And all I can say for Matthew Tkachuk is he's lucky he wasn't fighting Ethan's older brother, Everett Bear, because Everett is considerably bigger than Ethan and had a very specified role in junior hockey. And so, you know, and then the next thing you know, you see Smith at center ice, and you can tell he wants to get into it, but you got to have a willing combatant. And then afterwards, we find out that, you know, Darnell Nurse had basically said to Talbot, well, if you're out here and involved with somebody, there's a guy there at center ice that's ready to fight you. And I think Cam just took the challenge. I was just like, I'll be honest, I was in shock that he, you know, and I did get to know Cam a little. Look, we have a professional, respectful distance from the players. They get their space. we're on their, you know, we're on the team charter. That's their personal space. We try not, like, we're not buddy buddies with any of the friends, but with any of the players, but we care about the players. And I cared about Cam in that situation, but I wanted Mike Smith to win the fight. I mean, I'm an Oilers broadcaster, and make no mistake, I didn't want to see Cam get hurt, but I did want to see Mike get in the upper hand, and I had a pretty good feeling that he was gonna. And so, we're still talking about it what, 3 months later. It tells you everything you need to know, and just the hubbubaloo after that, and the fact that the Battle of Alberta was back, and you know, the NHL did like top 10 rivalries, and the Edmonton Calgary rivalry. I watch a lot of NBC down in the States when we're down there, and they don't even have it in the top 5 rivalries because the Oilers and the Flames haven't, you know, been, you know, reoccurring playoff teams and haven't met in the playoffs. Well, it was back on after this year, and that's a great place. And hopefully we might get a chance to see that in the playoffs at some stage.
So, Bob, we've been very generous with your time today, and we both appreciate it. I'm going to ask you one last really quick question before we let you go here. Obviously, one thing we're all sad about is we didn't get to see how this season plays out, and hopefully we'll get playoffs. We don't know. That's up in the air right now. To me, yeah. When I look at the postseason, I liked Edmonton to win their first round matchup, whether it was Vancouver or Calgary. I thought they would be the favored team there. I thought they were a coin flip against Vegas, probably a little worse than a coin flip, if I'm being honest. Where did you see them finishing? Or, you know, if we do get playoffs, where do you expect, how far do you think they'll go?
In 1984, the Edmonton Oilers, Glenn Sather, moved Mark Messier full-time to center. Now, there had been some growing pains with the Oilers. People, yes, they had the mammoth upset in 81 over the Canadiens. Even though if you watch the games now, it's not that big of an upset. Edmonton was faster and better. Obviously, got upset by the Kings in 82, who were like 45 points behind them, went to the final in 83. I think Edmonton's been a different team since they've had Drysdale at center full-time. And they were, so they were, they haven't been a great 5-on-5 team. Guys, like they've been terrific on special teams. I personally don't think the special teams would have been sustainable in the playoffs, but I think they would have been a way better 5-on-5 team than people gave them credit for. So because of that, I do think that the conference finals would have been a feasible place and are a feasible place for the Edmonton Oilers. If we do get playing again, they've got 2 of the 5 best players in the world. I don't think there's any question about that. They've got, we listed 14 forwards that can play. We've probably got 7 or 8 defensemen that can play. And they've got 2 different goaltenders in a time that you might need 2 different goaltenders. Why not them? You know, that's what I would say to you. So might sound like the internal optimist, but yes, they could be upset in the first round, but why couldn't they go to the conference final if they get playing and, or further? You know, I think for me, the biggest difference is, you know, like Vancouver played Edmonton a lot. In fact, every game Vancouver played against Edmonton this year was before Drysdale and McDavid were split up. So there's an illustration. So they haven't even played against the Oilers since they've gone sort of with it. It's a different team when they have that caliber of player on 2 separate lines. So I know that's not a quick response, Jonathan. But I do think that they would be capable. I believe they would be very competitive in the Western Conference playoffs. Let's put it that way.
Well, we just appreciate you taking the time today, Bob. And hopefully we'll all get a chance to see it play out in some form of postseason this year. Thanks again for joining us.
You two guys can call anytime when you're stuck and can't get anybody any better, okay?
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Thank you. Take care.
Lots of interesting stuff there. Obviously, we're running a little overtime here, so I'll just ask you quickly, Daniel, if there was any one point that really stood out to you about what Bob said, and then we'll close her out.
There's a lot of kind of neat or tidbits to consider. I think the one thing that stood out, I think you'd agree, is the potential, and he made it clear he's obviously not the GM, but the thought of a 1-year contract for Ethan Bear, just with so much uncertainty going on right now. I know you'd written about this way earlier in the year, John, but you know, ideally, there's the thought of maybe getting him on a longer term deal. or even a short, you know, there's the, you know, the 2-year bridge is kind of the more common number there. But 1 year potentially does make some sense, as he alluded to, with, you know, guys like Russell and Adam Larson in the last year of their deals, and maybe the potential for, you know, those guys to leave or things to change in a year from now. So that, you know, that's something to kind of think about. But yeah, that was the one thing that kind of jumped out at me again as just strictly his opinion. How about you, John?
Well, that's what I was going to say too, because it's an interesting way to approach it. Especially, I mean, it's like you said, it's open ended because we don't know where the cap's going to go. The other thing that jumped out at me was Evan Bouchard. Personally, I don't think Bouchard's going to give the Oilers a choice. I think he's going to come into camp next year, and I think he's going to win a job. But obviously, that remains to be seen. Everybody, thank you once again for listening to the show. Don't forget to please rate and subscribe the Oil Can on Apple. If you click on the show URL, theathletic.com/theoilcan, you'll get 40% off your subscription to The Athletic. I want to thank Bob Stauffer once again, the Oilers radio analyst and host of Oilers Now on 6:30 a.m. CHED. Great to have him on the show. And on behalf of Daniel Nugent Bowman, I'm Jonathan Willis, and thanks once again for joining us on this edition of the Oil Can at the Athletic.